Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. As always, you can follow me on the Everything app at jwright929. You can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep listening, you can stream us on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. We're also available on TuneIn and iHeartRadio. You can check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How was your extended weekend, sir?
It was good. It's always my brother's birthday weekend, so he's in town from Birmingham, or he was in town from Birmingham. So
nice.
Got to play golf with him and then my younger brother also and my dad, so that was fun on Sunday.
Not weather impeded like me.
It was sloppy. It was sloppy. We were able to play the round of golf. So that was an exciting weekend. Let's bring in our company as he is each and every Tuesday. He's the host of VSiN's College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast. Check him out also on VSiN Primetime, airing on weeknights. He's on the Everything app at 1 Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello. And just like James Harden, I vow to deliver in closeout games.
Well, were you still the better team?
I just thought I did a good job. Just thought I did a good job.
I do have the feeling, though, that Tim will not let us down, though. I think that's the difference.
I mean, at this point, is James Harden letting you down?
No, he's actually delivering
exactly what he always does.
But he's not doing what he says he's going to do.
I mean, it depends on...
We ask.
What is... what is the point?
Going 0 for 3 and turning the ball over 5 times is pretty much what he does in closeout games.
Does anyone have a theory? What is the point of
$42 million next year?
You think he's going to pick that one up?
He's either going to pick it up or he's going to get like $70 million guaranteed. What a life. What a life.
Can somebody help me out? What is the thought process if you're Cleveland on digging in and saying like, we've been the better team?
Yeah, that was a swing and a miss by old Kenny Atkinson. And now, I was listening to Windhorst late last night. He and Bontemps did like a quick reaction podcast. He kind of seemed to indicate, Windy did, Atkinson might be toast after 2 years. Which is pretty wild considering they won, what, 64 games last year in the regular season and 50-some-odd this year.
He definitely was coming under fire. I guess this is where I struggle with. Like, there are a lot of smart basketball guys that I know that were like, what is he doing? What is he doing? I guess I just came at it from the angle, he has to play James Harden. What's he going to do?
Well, and I think this has been said a couple of times. Why in the NBA do they switch so bleeping easily? Like, I'm not trying to compare my D3 mediocre college basketball career to the elite of the elite in the NBA, but it feels like at sometimes they don't even try to fight through a screen. They're like, oh, there's a body there, switch. And that's what they were doing going back to game one, getting into those switches so easily. But that being said, I mean, it's fun to poke fun at James Harden and the Cavs, and especially when Kenny Atkinson said what he said prior to last night. I don't know how to quantify this run by the Knicks.
I don't either because
there's part of me that's like, holy smokes, historically this has never happened before. A run like this in the postseason, point differential, heck, I think a run like this has never happened, period, in the history of the NBA.
According to Matt Moore, Hardwood Paroxysm on Twitter, it is the greatest margin of victory in a playoffs ever. And not just like, you know, that includes the 17 Warriors, the 2001 Lakers, all the Bulls. Like, you name the team, it includes them. And this has been a better, a better margin of victory. And George and I kind of talked about this, I don't know, maybe now 2 weeks ago, where it does feel like what you're watching in the West feels like the NBA Finals. But I do think if we wind back the clocks a year, it felt like whoever came out of the East was going to kind of be just it was going to be like
sacrificial lamb.
It was going to be like Nick Saban's greatest pump up speech that he gave before the Notre Dame national championship game, when after they'd beaten Georgia, he reminded his team that in 1980 the Olympic hockey team beat Russia, but they still had to go out and beat Finland. And that's kind of what it
felt. Unfortunately, I wish Notre Dame was more like Finland and had the lead going into the final period, like
correct,
like Finland did,
correct,
instead of being down 28-0.
But they were prepared. You know, they weren't resting on their laurels. But it did kind of feel like, all right, Indiana, cute story, this is fun. Like it was something fun to watch. But then it was like they're gonna have their come to Jesus moment, and you're gonna realize, all right, it'll be like five games, six, but it won't ever be that competitive. Well, no, it was, and until their best player got hurt in the second quarter, they had a lead on the Thunder on the road in game seven. Like, does that mean the Thunder don't win the game? No, but at the same time, it's like we clearly saw that was a worthy opponent, and it feels to me maybe because the East was even weaker this year, it feels like everything that the Knicks are doing is just kind of in its own alternate universe, but whenever they see whoever comes out of the West, it's going to be their comeuppance. And even if you just, like, forget margin of victory, like, net rating, they've been the best team. They've been better than the Pacers were last year. Like, I do wonder, like, are we sleeping on them, or is it possible that the East is that bad?
I don't know. I think over the next week, I think we're going to have a moment before game one, which is a week from tomorrow, where there's going to be a lot of takes that the Knicks have a chance to win the finals. That's my feeling. And I got a text last night from an odds maker in Vegas giving me the projected series prices.
All right, let me see if I can guess it.
All right. Let me just make sure I have. Let me just pull it up real quick on my text.
So the Thunder would be bigger favorites, correct?
Yes, Thunder would be bigger favorites. So just for reference, the Thunder went off as around -250 favorites.
Yep.
In this series against
the Spurs.
So knowing that as your reference point, shoot away on. I was a little high on Oklahoma City. This is, once again, this is projected. This isn't obviously anything you could bet on right now, but this was one, I think, very respected NBA odds maker in Vegas. This is what he gave me.
All right, my gut instinct is -800.
No, way too high.
So -400.
This is Oklahoma City?
Yeah, over the Knicks.
So this is what he said. He said, this is what I would have today. This was last night. But Jalen Williams' availability can alter price for OKC. This surprised me. OKC -250.
So basically he has them power rated with the Spurs
entering this series. And then if you want to take a guess on, and remember, the Spurs and Thunder both have home court. So that's also priced in as well. They would have four as opposed to the three. And if you think back to the Pistons-Cavs series, that was like a true coin toss series. And I think the Pistons closed -120-ish because they had home court in game seven.
I was literally about to say -120 even money for the Knicks.
It's a little higher. Excuse me. San Antonio 175, Knicks +155. So I know gambling fodder might go over some of the listeners' heads here, but I think the Knicks are getting a lot of respect based off of what we've seen so far. I mean, to have them +210 against the Thunder, who without fail were the highest power rated team, still are the highest power rated team in the NBA. Obviously, they're dealing with injuries right now, but I think that's actually a lot of respect for the Thunder. Or excuse me, for the Knicks.
I guess my follow-up question would be is how much do you have to bake into the price that the Knicks are going to be one of the most heavily bet teams?
I think you do have to bake in a little bit. I think there's also some liability. So once again, I know I'm throwing a lot of gambling terms out there. All year long, the Thunder were not bet in the futures market. And why is that? Because their price was never really exciting to the betting public. Now, there might have been sharp guys who took Oklahoma City, but the betting public was taking the Knicks and taking the Spurs. They were long shots heading into this year. I could kind of get the odds here in just a moment of what they were. I think a lot of respect for the Knicks right now heading into this series. And, you know, going back preseason, hold on, I'm pulling it up right now. The Knicks were...
I mean, weren't they one of the...
They were 22-1 before the playoffs started. The Knicks.
What were they? But I feel like coming into the season, weren't they one of the favorites? Is not the right term, but I think they had one of the five or six best odds.
Yeah, they were 7-1. This is according to BetMGM. They were 9-1 in October to win the championship. The Spurs, by the way, because didn't Wemby get hurt early on in the year?
He had a knee thing that he kind of dealt with, and then they. Remember, they were just kind of really overly careful with him. Like, at certain games, like, he just had, like, a 25-minute minute restriction. But, like, he never had, like, the extended absence. But, yeah, he did have – there was, like, a scary moment, I remember, where he, like, they thought he hurt his knee.
On October 21st, the Spurs were 66-1 to win the title.
Because coming into the year, and again – this is just from Basketball Reference, so I don't know which lines that they're using. But the Thunder had the best odds at plus 240. Nuggets were plus 550. Cavs plus 750. And then the Knicks at 9-1 were the fourth best odds.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just that weird reality of, like, I feel like when I'm watching the Western Conference, I'm watching a different sport. But there's also the situation where, like, these two teams are beating the hell out of each other.
Well, I think if you're the Knicks right now, you're sitting back. You've got 8 days, I guess 9 days, right?
Love that band.
For the NBA Finals. You'll be on the road. But the reality is they're more than likely going to play three more games of just absolute wars. And these dudes are dropping, I don't want to say dropping like flies, but they're all sorts of banged up. I mean, A.J. Mitchell's out tonight. Jalen Williams, questionable. I would be a little surprised if he played tonight for the Thunder. We know that De'Aaron Fox isn't totally healthy. We know that Dylan Harper is not completely healthy. Like, there's three more games, more than likely. So... yeah, I mean, the Knicks are going to be sitting back and feeling pretty good about where they are from a health standpoint heading into game one of the NBA Finals.
Well, the other thing that I was thinking about this weekend, you know, when we always talk about what are the best weeks of sports and, best stretch, however you want to define it. Do we sleep on Memorial Day?
I think so.
And normally, this is one of those, because it was such an early Memorial Day, normally we get during this weekend, we get the beginning of the college baseball regionals. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not a big college baseball product fan, which
a lot of fun,
I can understand, the regionals and the super regionals and the College World Series is a fun postseason. But, I mean, you think about it, obviously we had the tragedy with the Coca-Cola 600, but it's like you have great racing, including the Indy 500, which we had the closest finish ever. I think TNT has really helped elevate the French Open in terms of the way that they cover it. They're basically showing us everything. Like, it has new juice. It has new enthusiasm. You've got that. You always have the conference finals going in both hockey and basketball. You got baseball going. Like, I feel like we don't ever think about it. Maybe it's because it's the kickoff of summer, and so you're just more thinking about you know, what you're getting into that weekend, but I thought this was a great weekend of sports.
And every so for me, growing up in Maryland, every Memorial Day weekend,
lacrosse title,
was a lacrosse title. And you know, we had the semis on Saturday, championship on Sunday. The women's championship, men's were Saturday, Monday. The women's championship was on Sunday. That game was awesome between Northwestern and North Carolina. A little bummed by my Irish yesterday and the performance they showed against Princeton. But that just, I said it on my show Saturday morning. I said,
well, was Buckner on the team again?
No, Buckner has exhausted his eligibility.
In lacrosse, but not football?
He's from my understanding, he will not be on the team this
But this was technically, he could play football this year. He couldn't play basketball? Or he could play lacrosse?
I don't know. Maybe, yeah, he might have exhausted that. We have a new Faison, by the way. Jordan has moved on to, I make enough money in football, so I'm not going to play lacrosse anymore.
Smart.
And his little brother, who's supposed to be a high school senior, was playing for the Irish this year. But I said on my show Saturday, I said, look, I don't expect anyone to full screen lacrosse, but throw it in the quad box. It's a fun watch. You might not know what the heck's going on.
Well, it's also,
they zing.
The middle of the day. It's not like it's impeding. Yeah,
of course. It's early. You know, there's contact. There's goalies who look like maniacs because they don't wear any pads and net for some reason. It's a fun watch. It's over, so you missed it. But
keep that on your radar for next year.
Yeah, next year, keep that in mind. Well, adding to that, did you watch Texas Tech Florida softball?
So I was unaware that it went to game three. I also did not realize this. I just thought Texas Tech with our pitcher from Stanford, I just figured they would be like no worse than a 3 or 4 seed. I didn't realize they had to go on the road.
Well, yeah, and then the whole Mia Williams, Jason Williams' daughter.
Yeah.
She left. Her mom apparently posted some things on Instagram last year that got people all fired up. She got hit like 5 or 6 times, then dropped 2 bombs. Oh my God, it was awesome. Loved every second of it.
So I also
would say this about
what happened to when softball was only 1 week ahead.
Yeah, it's way ahead now because they got the World Series.
Because they were doing the Super Regionals this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know baseball was so delayed.
Well, it's always normal. It's just because Memorial Day was so early this year.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Like, it's always been the last weekend in May, but I think we can also
see. But I'll say this about college baseball. Like, I wasn't locked in, but just watching some of the finishes you had, and you guys might know this better than me, was it Southern Miss who was down 3?
Yes,
in
they
the
were.
Ninth with 2 outs and 2 strikes, and the dude hit a grand slam to win the game.
Yeah, because one of the kids used to play for my dad. I think he's on MTSU. That was a tough scene.
Some of these finishes. Then I was getting ready to do my show Saturday morning, so I was up late on, you know, Friday night doing prep work. It was, I want to say, 11:30 Pacific, and UCLA, or no, it was Nebraska, Michigan was like in the 4th inning in Omaha. Like, some of these conference tournaments, they're played in front of nobody. They're on the most
20,000 empty seats.
Yeah, I mean, they're all playing in these minor league ballparks, except for, I think, the ACC had a pretty good showing for their championship.
I mean, the SEC tournament's always pretty well attended.
And that's in Hoover, right?
Correct.
Yeah, it just means more.
It just means more.
But yeah, I think I agree. Look, Labor Day weekend's always going to be bigger for me because it's the start of college football. But like, I think from the...
But like, my whole point is, it's not even like, I'm not even saying it should be in the top, but like, we never even throw it in.
It's very good. I contend, agree or disagree, I think conference final round is better than Stanley Cup and NBA finals because you know every night you're getting 2 games every night.
I tend to agree. I will say that
it's not to the level like
you and George would know better because of the playoff format, but it does seem like, weirdly, because of Bettman's emphasis on wanting rivalries early, it does feel like sometimes when you get to the conference finals that those can be letdowns, and then it ramps back up in the Stanley Cup final. But in general, I agree with you. I would much rather have, I mean, like, for instance, we have the Avalanche are down 3-0, but what, two of the games have gone to overtime?
Comebacks. So Colorado was up 1-0 going into this third period.
It's the first time what they've blown a third period lead, and they did it twice in the same series. And then on top of that, you've got the team in the Avalanche that everybody has thought, well, this is the best team. Granted, they have key injuries, McCarr, and now McKinnon. What's going on with McKinnon? He does not look like remotely, as George will say, we'll find out when this series is over. He's going to have 5 different surgeries.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Like we'll learn
like
that.
His leg amputated.
That's right. An LBI.
Right. That's just
now.
A lower body
LBI
injury.
For now. Yeah.
But I don't know, because that's kind of the weird thing about the NBA is. I have been pretty underwhelmed by the playoffs in general, but this Western Conference Final is one of my favorite playoff series ever. But then I just wonder, like, am I completely being too dismissive of the Knicks? Because maybe this is the NBC of it all. Like, maybe NBC is just presenting it in a way, but doesn't this series feel like it is so much more than anything we've seen in the East so far?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, these are the two best and highest power rated teams in the NBA, and they're playing each other. And as the Western Conference playoffs really started, I think we all looked around and said, okay, can we just get, can we get Spurs and Thunder in this Western Conference Finals? Once we realized the Nuggets weren't the Nuggets of recent years and the Timberwolves were fine. Lakers obviously didn't.
I think Ant's injury took any steam that, like, if you could have talked yourself into the Timberwolves, the steam got just completely let out when you realized Anthony Edwards was not going to be, peak of his powers.
I know you could do this almost every year. If everyone was healthy, we really could have had a pretty epic postseason in the West. If Luka was healthy, I'm not saying they would have beat the Thunder. They wouldn't have, but I was impressed.
We could have had better games.
When we had good games, they just didn't have enough. They ran out of gas. They were up twice at halftime. I thought they had good schemes, but at the end of the day, Jimmy's and Joe's outdo X's and O's. And that's what we saw from the Thunder with their depth. We saw it with Kevin Durant. He gets, air quotes, hurt. So he doesn't play against the Lakers in the first round. And, Anthony Edwards dealt with injuries as well. So, and we're getting into this series, man. Like, there's part of me that's like, man, I want Jalen Williams to be healthy. I want De'Aaron Fox to be totally healthy. I mean, I get it. It's a battle of attrition and who can, in the survival of the fittest. But I think it is a fair question to ask about the Knicks, When we saw the Warriors in 2017 or the Lakers in 2001 or those Bulls teams in the, mid to late 90s, we were like, those are juggernauts. Those are all-time teams. We embrace them. And I'm sure it's different in New York, but it does feel like it's it's like, yeah, cool. Cool story. You didn't play the Celtics. You kind of, you played a wounded Sixers team that was toast. I was surprised at the Cavs. I mean, can we do the autopsy on this series and just say the 22-point blown lead
was
the death nail to the Cavaliers?
George and I talked about this. It's like, I get it. You got to play the series. But isn't it kind of nice when you watch that loss and just your experience of watching sports tells you, oh, they went from all of a sudden being interesting in this series to sweep is very much on the table. Like, what it felt like to me was the game where J.R. Smith forgot the score.
Yeah.
And you could tell LeBron knew, like, they're on the road. Like, that was a huge, huge swing game. And when they're unable to pull that off, you just knew, like, man, this is going to be really tough, because when you're that big of an underdog and you're unable to go and steal one on the road when the team plays like crap, you're just going to pay the price. Like, it was kind of nice to just go right after you saw that live, you're like, they're going to get swept, and just see it happen. Like, there was something reassuring. As it's not even an anti-Cleveland thing. It was just like there was some that could have been. It could have been in reverse. The Knicks could have been down, you know, up 22, and the Cavs came back, and you're like, oh boy, I've seen that loss before. It was the fact that you've seen that type of loss and what it can mean to a team. It was nice to have that come to fruition.
Yeah, it did. And I thought we would get. I thought game three, and it was funny last night. You know, the contrarian in me was like, man, I really want to take the Cavs. And I thankfully just was like, no, I don't know. And goodness gracious. I mean, they just.
That looked like a team that had no intention of getting back on a plane.
I mean, I thought Mitchell played hard, and that's really all I can say about the Cavaliers last night.
So here's the note from Matt Moore over on X, the Everything app. Right now, the margin of victory for the Knicks is 19.36 per game. I believe this would be the Minnesota Lakers, who played a three-game postseason, had a margin of victory of 18.67. By the way, they were 1-2 with that margin. So what did they win that other game by? But the 71 Bucks, who were 12-2, had a 14.5 margin of victory. The 17 Warriors, 13.5. The 0-1 Lakers, 12.75. The 91 Bulls, 11.7. Last year's Cavs still had an 11.7 margin of victory. The 61 Celtics, the 87 Lakers, the 26 Spurs, and the 26 Thunder are still basically half of what they are. Like, and I know that there's like the whole East of it, but as Matt Moore has also pointed out, the East won 49% of their games against the West. Now, I would also argue some of that all comes down to, didn't it feel like we had more teams in the West tanking than in the East?
We had Memphis, Utah, Sacramento, New Orleans.
New Orleans was bad. They weren't necessarily tanking. So we had in the East, we would have had Wizards.
Brooklyn.
And then the Bulls came in late to the party, like the Grizzlies,
the
deadline.
Bucks did too.
Yeah.
They started to tank late.
So it's about even. I was trying to see where. All right, so this is from Lev Akabas over on the Everything app that Matt Moore has retweeted. Lots of NBA fans in here talking about how weak the Eastern Conference is, but that simply was not true. The East won 49% of its games against the West, better than most seasons this century. The top four in the East went 18-5 against the top four in the West.
All right, so this is going to be my question for the NBA Finals. Does this NBA Finals mirror last year, which is what you pointed out? No one gave the Pacers any shot, and they had more than a shot. If Halliburton's Achilles doesn't pop, do they win the NBA Finals? Or does this mirror 2023? And 2023, that was the peak of Heat culture.
Yeah.
That was my neighbor came to me and said, I don't know, Jimmy Butler, he's got something. And I just look at him, I go, Nuggets in five.
I think this mirrors last year more than that, because the Heat really, I mean, the Heat should have been knocked out in the play-in.
Right. And then they beat the Celtics, and then they made this run, and it was just like, oh, Heat culture, they're going to beat the Nuggets. I'm like, no, they're not. They're going to get destroyed. And they did.
I think what you could say about the Knicks is, the Knicks are like that team that disappointing regular season, but right now they are playing at what they were expected to be coming into the season.
Right.
Which was one of the top four teams.
And as you pointed out, based off of the odds preseason, this was a top four team in the futures market On September 24th, it was Thunder, this is BetMGM, plus 275. Knicks, Cavs, Nuggets, Rockets, all plus 750. So they were tied for the second shortest odds in the NBA heading into the season. So I think that's a good point. This isn't a surprise. It's a team reaching their potential in the postseason. But there's the caveat of, did the East just stink? Which, how many years did we have those LeBron Cavalier teams just bulldoze the Eastern Conference and then run into the Warriors?
Yeah, I mean, you can even, I think, even go back. It's like the East has largely, in the, definitely since the second Jordan three-peat, the best team has kind of clouded us from really digging deeper. But it's like LeBron's over in the East, and he was always a threat because he was LeBron. But it's been kind of not great for basically 30-something years.
The Celtics teams, I thought were, I mean, the Celtics teams that made it have been pretty good. 22.
As I told George, though, man, those teams get a lot of run for having one more title than Detroit this century.
Well, I think we said it when the Celtics were eliminated. It was like, man, good thing they won that title in 24, because this would be a whole other discussion for that franchise and that core that they have. But they didn't win the title, and they bulldozed their way through the East. And that was a weird West, right?
Yep.
Where Dallas emerged for no reason in 24.
Well, really, it was that situation where, and maybe this will be what we're going to see the rest of the way. Dallas basically, not the best team that year was the Thunder. But the Thunder hadn't been there, and they were learning how to do it. And Luka got them basically twice on like a last possession.
And would you agree that if you're the Knicks, even though Wemby is an alien, you would much rather face the Spurs in the finals?
Yes, I think so.
Because of that, they're young. And not that the
well,
Knicks
and
have
they
the
just they do not value the basketball.
No.
Like, I think that's kind of the real question. It's like, I know the two teams in the West can play good enough defense to win. That's kind of the question I have with the Knicks. It's like, are they good enough defensively? And it's like, really? Yeah. I mean, the one question mark is Brunson, but they do a pretty good job of neutralizing. And Brunson, let's not act like Brunson deserves to be in the same category as Harden.
No.
There was an unreal stat that was going around on Friday. It was like 82% of defensive possessions, Harden doesn't move. Someone like got the spectrum. Let me pull it, because it was from the
That's
Athletic.
Awesome.
It was like when you watched it in real time, you're like, yeah, that makes sense.
That's so
all right.
Good.
This is from Fred Katz. Harden does not move on defense. In fact, such a statement is quantifiable. Second Spectrum Sports tracks the speeds at which players move throughout the course of all games. It can then show what percentage of time a player goes at a slow speed, a medium speed, or a fast speed. Harden moves slowly or not at all on 81% of the time on defensive possessions this season. Of the 582 players who stepped on an NBA court in the 25-26 season, that ranked dead last.
I'm going to go ahead and pick up that $42 million.
Yeah, I'm just going to go ahead
for next year.
Gonna go ahead and pick that one up. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hastein joins the program. We'll talk to him next. We'll get into the list here in hour number two. We're also going to pick our top 10. It went so well last summer. We're going to rank our top 10 college football quarterbacks coming into the season. As you will famously remember, neither one of us had the eventual Heisman Trophy winner and number one pick ranked in our top 10. I don't even think we mentioned him in the honorable mentions. So you're going to want to make sure you take notes during that ranking. We'll do that as well later on during the show. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Music Means, we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He, of course, is Eric Hasseltine, kind enough to join us on his lunch break. Eric, are we camping this weekend? What's going on? Or this week,
well,
I should say.
I'm not camping. The kids are camping, yes. We are camping today and all week and pretty much all summer. It's fun, man, other than when, you know, bats go the wrong way. But, yeah, man, it's happened to all of us, right?
It happened
to me. What's your worst baseball injury?
I had a problem at an early age with swinging objects. On my birthday, around 5 or 6, my next-door neighbor hit me with a golf club. That resulted in stitches.
I got hit by one of those by a kid when I was an adult, yeah,
yep.
And as a kid.
10-year-old baseball infield fungo, and I still to this day, you might know him, James Owen, does the timeouts for Tiger games, one of the salt of the earth men. I walked right into the bat, and he felt so bad. And it's like, even at 10 years old, I knew, he was like, well, that one's on me. That one was probably 5 or 6 stitches as well. But that's, I never really got hurt, like, in the sense of, like, gameplay. Like, I had some, like, the elbow issues of, like, just throwing too much. But I was pretty lucky, man. I played competitive sports, and I never broke a bone. I never, like, tore a ligament. I'm kind of a rare breed.
So I would say, I mean, aside from when I cut my knee across a homemade lacrosse goal that had a bolt sticking out and cut it to the bone 3 days before our first game, or 2 days before our first game of the season, which essentially ended most of my season. My best was actually after I was done with college. We had a bunch of guys that had played college baseball. We got into a league together to kind of warm up for tournaments, and we were at a field where the cage was made improperly. And for anybody making a batting cage, do yourself a favor and put the nets inside the poles, not outside them. Because if the ball hits the pole without a net to stop it, it can shoot right back.
Yes, it will.
Batter, which, yeah, so I was working outer half and barreled one to the right center field side. All I heard was the ping of the bat, the ping of the pole, and the next thing I knew, I was on the ground with baseball stitches across the under part of my eye, which I will say, and it wasn't a high-level league, so this isn't anything big. But that day, I went 3 for 4 and had 3 RBIs, and our coach goes, can you get hit in the face with the ball every day? And I said, I'd rather not. I'm not going to lie to you. That didn't feel good. So that was the worst one for me.
It's always tough when a concussion might help out.
Yeah, I know. When you do that, time with one of those groups, I got food poisoning going down to a tournament in Fresno. And if anybody's ever been in Fresno, California in the summertime, it's like 116 and dry and hot and gross. And I got food poisoning. So needless to say, I was not feeling great, but I got all tournament and finished second in the tournament in RBI. So they're like the same thing. They're like, you're eating Jack in the Box every day before games. And I'm like, absolutely not. I would rather stink out loud than go through what I just went through, even though I had a great weekend.
It's always a tough scene when you're eating J-Bo sober.
Oh, you've been there. Like, see, I don't know how many Southerners know the Jack in the Box, you know, method of attacking when you've had a few and you go late night, it's the 2 tacos and your favorite sandwich.
Of course.
But if you're eating regular, it was the sourdough Jack and a dollar chicken sandwich on the side. And I'm not sure which one it was. I think it was the sourdough Jack because one of the guys that went with me also got incredibly ill. So,
yeah, I can safely say Jack in the Box would probably be primary suspect number one.
Yeah, no, it was definitely the sourdough Jack. Yeah, there was no question. So, but yeah, man, I enjoy coaching. You know that, and I get an opportunity up here at our training facility, DBAT, and then have my own couple of weeks of basketball camps in Germantown, where I really enjoy working with the mid-level guys, like not the high end. You're already a baller, a stud, and we get some of those through the baseball camp, but I started coaching more with the basketball camps because I realized when you're a mid-level basketball player and you go to some of the camps in our city because there's so many good players, you kind of just get pushed off to the side. And it's not the coach's fault. They're trying to train everybody, but it's intimidating. So where you can go to a place and learn how to play, and it's okay to not be great. It's okay to not be Steph Curry, and we kind of stress that with the baseball ones too, but especially with basketball. It's been fun to watch some of the kids that came through our camps, and we've had to postpone them a couple of times, but when now they're playing junior high or middle school or whatever you call it, or even high school basketball, and see where they were to where they got, you know, that's fun for me. It's not about money or anything else. It's about giving kids an opportunity to play the game, whichever game it is, and have fun with it.
All right, for the parents out there that might be quickly realizing that school's out and we got to figure out some stuff to do, if they want to get involved in the camp circuit, how do they do it?
I mean, you can look anywhere, but like if they're baseball, there's great facilities all around. I don't want to just, you know, sit here and harp on the one we're at. We're at DBAT in off Sycamore View, and then there's a couple of new places in Collierville that do it as well. If you just look up youth baseball camps, for our basketball camp, it's held at OLPH Elementary, and if you just go on their website, you can sign up. But there's all kinds of great camps. I mean, we've got Shoot 360 has been a sponsor. They've got basketball camps. There's just great places for kids to go play. But also know your kids' level and make sure that the camp you send them to isn't for advanced players. I have a lot of friends that are baseball and basketball instructors that run specific to advanced high-level players only. You don't want a beginner in that, and that's okay. There are spots for them. There's all kinds of things. And on top of that, having had a kid that's now kind of aged out of the camp age, there's great camps. There's computer camps. There's coding camps. There's other camps that are not athletic-oriented. And they, you know, a lot of them do great things. Just kind of do your due diligence and look around. And I've yet to meet a camp, if you call them day of and go, hey, I've got a kid that really wants to come to camp, that they're going to go, nah, we're good. We don't want them here. So, the more the merrier. We love it, with what we do, but obviously not everybody plays baseball or basketball or any sport per se. Just find something that keeps your kid occupied, because I think, as a parent, that's one of the battles we all fight, is that it's really easy for kids to just kind of disappear into a phone or to an iPad or to a video game for 5-6 hours a day when there's opportunities for them to get out and be kids and do things that can, you know, help them later in life.
We're in swim lessons right now, so that tells you where the right household is.
Yeah, I do remember doing a swim lesson, and the guy just kind of tossed me in and said, figure it out. I was like, that's not good.
Yeah,
it was not my favorite camp, but it worked for a lot of my friends. I just like playing Marco Polo.
I'm with you. All right, we're talking with Eric Hasseltine here, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. And I was thinking about it in terms of this. Does it seem – the draft has always been important. And especially for a small market team, it's always going to be important for the Grizzlies. But do you think now that everyone is looking around and looking at the CBA, does it feel like that the league in totality is taking it more seriously than it has before?
Look at how the two elite teams in the West have been built, and it's essentially been through the draft and assets acquired in the draft. Yes, the Thunder got Alex Caruso via trade, but they traded Josh Giddey, who they took in the lottery. They got Shea Gilgeous-Alexander via trade, but, you know, SGA is not SGA without a team around him. And they've made some mistakes with all the first-round picks they've had. Usman Jang was a high pick, and it didn't work out because they also got Jalen Williams with a later lottery pick, and you sometimes have to take two guys that play the same position. But you look at San Antonio, and obviously there's some luck involved there. They had the number one and number two, and they got – but they got Stephon Castle at number four. So that's the problem where we run into with people saying, well, you shouldn't tank, you shouldn't tank, you shouldn't tank. Okay, the problem is these two teams are showing that taking years where you're developing talent and seeing what can work and guys that can play, and, you know, not knowing you're not a playoff caliber team, and playing guys that you know are probably going to take a loss, can work. It can also backfire because there's no reason the Washington Wizards with that philosophy shouldn't be better than they are. So it does work. And with the new CBA and the way superstars are going to make just astronomical amounts of money, teams are going to have to start getting more thrifty. I mean, just by making that all-NBA team, a great example is Jalen Duren. He's in line for almost $60 million a year. A lot of people talking, should the Pistons give it to him because, you know, he didn't play well in the playoffs? And that's only up to the Pistons front office. But if you invest that kind of money in Jalen Duren and you've got another all-NBA guy in Cade Cunningham, you're going to sink in total contracts over $500 million. How do you sprinkle talent around that? Well, you've got to get rookies. When rookies develop, how do you keep them? That's the problem. So I think the draft becomes more important, whereas in years past, we've seen teams go for three stars, and you got to have the big three like Miami did and Boston did, and the Lakers have tried to do it. These teams that had the money, and, you know, Golden State's big three was built through the draft. They drafted Curry, they drafted Thompson, they drafted Draymond Green. They were able to go get Kevin Durant just through one of those crazy fall in the right place, right time scenarios of every owner had $70 million to spend. And so they went and got Kevin Durant, and he wanted to play there. And everybody can knock Kevin Durant for that. Whatever. He was going to go somewhere, and he was going to leave Oklahoma City. And so he chose the place he wanted to play. I don't have a big problem with that. But I think you now have to really focus on not only at least hitting a solid player in the lottery, you've got to look to find solid players outside the lottery, and you got to look to find second-round guys that can contribute. It's hard to build up, and you're going to have years where you're asking fans to be patient, which, as you know, Jeffrey, is like asking the gods to give you the winning lotto number sometimes. Fans aren't really the most patient people, and I understand that. But you're going to have to be patient and understand everybody's end, a run will come to an end. The Spurs run finally came to an end. That was the longest one I ever saw. But some really good teams, their run's coming to an end. Milwaukee's run seemingly has come to an end. They were an elite Eastern Conference team that won a title. Those days are gone. Eventually, the Thunder's days are going to be over. Not going to be any time right away, nor the Spurs. But that Denver team, they've got a 2 or 3 year window left. How long can Jokic continue to play at this level? Other teams that are veteran-laden, how long will it last? So you've got to be stocking up on guys that can play, then have a year or two where you're figuring out who can fit in where and how the pieces mix, and developing new young players. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think the way the CBA is going to be structured and the amount of money superstars are going to make, and it is a star-driven league, and that was – in all honesty, the genius of David Stern in terms of marketing the league. As much as we tell players, play for the name on the front, not the name on the back, as an organization, the NBA is about the name on the back and then a few of the names on the front. But the names on the back can market the league, because nobody cared about the Milwaukee Bucks until they had a star player like Giannis Antetokounmpo, other than people in Milwaukee or fans. And the Bucks in the 80s were an elite-level team, just never got past the Sixers or the Celtics. So we don't talk about them like that. We don't talk about the Hawks, who had Dominique Wilkins as a team that was elite back in the day, but just couldn't get over that hump. But we talk about Dominique Wilkins being an all-time great. So the league has to market it that way. And so those guys are going to get taken care of. And I believe that you really have to do your due diligence, and you have to avoid mistakes, and you have to try to find home runs, and they're still going to happen. It's just, you know, how do you recover from them? I mean, I go back, one of my favorite stories about those is the Damian Lillard situation. Sacramento was picking right before Portland. They needed a guard. They needed a big. They convinced themselves as a front office they could find a guard in the free agent market, and that Thomas Robinson out of Kansas was a big that you couldn't find out there. Even though Damian Lillard, who went the very next pick, in their draft workouts, according to the stories, tested off the charts. And Jeff Petrie, who is a former Portland guy and was their GM, who usually didn't make mistakes, made a mistake. He felt like, this guy's good, but is he really that elite? Yeah, he tests on the eye test. Can he do it at the NBA level? This guy's 6'10". He's athletic. But he didn't pan out. And that was a massive miss. I mean, think about what happens in Sacramento if they had Damian Lillard there all those years. who knows? Who knows where their path goes? Portland's path immediately shot up, and they ended up going to some conference finals and being a perennial playoff team. Did they make an NBA finals? No, but I know everybody kind of uses that as the linchpin. Only two teams out of 15 get to the conference finals every year. And some teams that get there got there for various reasons. They always talk about the Grizzlies got there because Russell Westbrook was hurt. I always go back to that one and say, hey, you know, when the two teams played in the regular season, Russell Westbrook was kind of rendered ineffective by a guy named Tony Allen. He also took Kevin Durant. But it certainly made a big impact on it, and that series ended in five because of it. But then the Grizzlies got a taste of elite-level basketball by the Spurs, who swept them. So if that's your gauge of success, that's tough. But you can be a perennial playoff team, but you just have to build it by making as few mistakes as possible.
Are we sleeping on the Knicks?
It's wild to me. Do you remember in the early part of that first series? Like, there was talk that they're going to get bounced in the first round.
Because well, they lost. It was like the same thing we kept seeing, you know, with them in their last playoffs. Yeah. It's like they lose games they shouldn't. You're like, here we go again. And it turns out, nope, those were just two close games, and the ball bounced a certain way.
Yeah. And when you break it down, you go back, and you're like, they are absolutely pummeling teams. I mean, they are just everybody's, oh, look out for Atlanta. One game, and like, look out for Atlanta. Yeah, they were solid. But, like, the Knicks flexed their muscle, said, all right, hang on a second. And, you know, they figured it out. Did they have a great regular season? It wasn't bad. They were the 3 seed, right?
Yep.
I mean, they were still pretty good. But even when I was up there, and I think that's part of that market, when the Grizzlies were playing up there and you're like, you're talking to their people, like, oh, I don't know, man, it's the Knicks, it's this. I'm like, dude, your starting five is on par with anybody's in the league, and on top of that, you now have a coach using bench players more and letting them figure it out. That was, to me, part of the struggles. Those guys like Deuce McBride, Landry Shamet, Mitchell Robinson, they weren't getting those minutes for Tom Thibodeau. They were getting like 10, 12, 13, 14, and then you get into a playoff series and guys are kind of wearing down, although I still think there was more smoke than fire there. Like, these guys can play a lot of minutes. They're fine. But now they have more game experience, and now they're making more plays. I mean, go back to last night. I'm watching, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is a blowout. Well, Cleveland starts to make their run in the third quarter. It wasn't Jalen Brunson stepping back and burying six straight shots. It was Bridges getting wide open. It was defense with guys in there. It's Shamet. It's Robinson. It's guys getting in there and making plays, because they've been making them through the regular season in bigger moments than they had in the past. So I don't know that we slept on them. I guess you could say that. They're good. They're dangerous. Now, are they good enough to beat the Spurs or the Thunder? We'll see. We'll see. You feel like with Karl Anthony Towns, if he's locked in and engaged, he poses some problems. But if you're a Thunder team, do you want to play big with Hartenstein going back to New York and Holmgren on the floor at the same time? Are they going to get healthy? Is Wemby ready to light the torch this early in a career? I'm not going to bet against that, but I think it's going to be a heck of a run either way. And the Knicks have a lot of interchangeable pieces. You know, other than Brunson, when you start setting screens and switching, Hart plays bigger, Bridges is long and athletic, OG Anunoby, Towns, you can switch everything. And a lot like what we're seeing with San Antonio being the more physical hit-first team, the Knicks seem to have figured that out. And they just came out last night and said, we're ending this now. This is not going any further. We are putting these guys down. And to me, I just saw this run across the ticker, so maybe I'm misquoting it. If I am, I apologize. Did James Harden really say, I still think we're the better team?
Yes, he did.
Did we watch the same game? I mean, look, you can say on the roster, individual talent, top to bottom, maybe it's a toss-up. Those guys just drummed you. And I think Kenny Atkinson's a pretty good coach. I get you're trying to save face.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.